How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is my friend and my mentor, Andy Macken. He is the founder of the Macken Group. They're one of the fastest growing companies in Ireland with offices across the globe. Here's my chat with Andy.
Andy, welcome back to the pod.
Thank you very much. One of the few, I believe.
I love being able to say that, like, because it's we're at it so long now, we're at it 5 years now, and it's so special to have people like you coming back to be a little tiny part of your journey. So we chatted in March 2021.
Yeah, seems like a lifetime at this stage.
It feels like a fever dream, honest to God.
COVID, all that stuff.
When people ask me about those episodes, I'm like, I can't even
blur.
Because it was such a mental time in terms of, like, you were trying to navigate business, we're trying to navigate life. I think during the time we chatted, I think you can go 5K. Like, that's only a few years ago. Like, it's wild. So, like, I love being able to chat now and go, what's been happening? But just give us a quick recap for anyone that hasn't listened. They can go back and listen to March 2021 episode. But anyone that hasn't listened, what do you do?
Okay, so the Macken Group is a body of companies, really, Gary. So I think you were slagging me at the time saying, great to be talking to somebody with a group of companies.
I was slagging it in awe. I want a group. That's what I want.
I was like, a group of companies? What the hell am I doing? Like, Macken Group basically is the EHS side of the business, is the consultancy and training side of the business. That was the founding company back in 2004. Still with us today. Still grows every year of 3, 4, 5%.
What does that do?
Nice and steady. Basically helps people, you know, companies be compliant with legislation in regarding health and safety. So anything from your safety statement, method statement, policy statements regarding safety, worker safety, all that kind of stuff, we do that. And on the training side of things, then you'd have your typical kind of first aid, manual handling, abrasive wheel, safe pass. We also do a lot of bespoke training where a company might come in and say, listen, we're looking for a particular safety message for this particular piece of equipment. Could you design a piece of training around that? So we'll design the training for
them
and then deliver it for them so that the staff or the team know exactly the do's and don'ts of what they can do with that. So that's an interesting part of the team. And the guys we have on the team, and that they love it because it's something different every day. It's not the same drum roll kind of, which can be like any company can get boring, you know, because the mundane is 95% of the work you do. You know,
it's work, so for called work for a reason, right?
Exactly. The grind, you know. But when you're designing training and things like that, it's interesting because you're starting from scratch, blank canvas, right? How are we going to deliver this? How are we going to get the message across? And how's the client going to be happy that they're satisfied, that everybody knows exactly what they're doing? So that's the kind of EHS out of the business, which is Mac and EHS. And
then, that's how you started. That was kind of day one.
That was 2004. I was still in the Navy. Obviously, I'd done 21 years in the Navy. But about a year and a half before I left, I think it was October 2004, I set up the business. And I know I was telling you at the time when we did the first podcast, I said to Marion, I said, look, I'll do 3 days a week, mind the boys for 2 days, and that gave your mother a break. And we'll just see how it goes. And she's still to this day is like, whatever happened to that 3 day a week gig you were talking about? Because it's insane, like, what has happened in the last kind of almost 20 years, or 20 years in business in October.
Congratulations. That's some milestone.
Yeah, it's huge. I have to pinch myself. So 21 years in the Navy, I'm almost at 21 years in business, and I'm only 57. Like, I feel like a huge amount to give still. So that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you're going to do next. Yeah. We'll get to that later. And I want to actually touch on that, because as humans and as business people, we tend to think linearly. Well, I'll do this, and then I'll do 3 days, and then the idea is this. And kind of the message I try to get across in the pod is, like, your first idea is not even going to closely resemble what happens in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, because there's a huge fear around starting. And it's the people like yourself who, like, go, I'm just going to start with this. Start somewhere. The first step leads to the second step, leads to the 10th step. I love that you were like, 3 days a week, lovely life balance. How did it snowball then into, like, a group and 20 years later?
Well, yeah, the balance never happened anyway for starters, because you get engrossed in what you're doing. I mean, I thought it was wonderful working out of what was then the kids' playroom, which turned into my office, which then turned into another office. But it's like what does Jim Rohn say, like, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. And it literally was that, Gary. It was like, okay, I kind of like the health and safety. What can I do? Who do I have to talk to? where am I going to, like, how am I going to get my first client? So I got started getting the word out. I was still in the Navy, obviously, for the first year and a half. So it was kind of easy in that some of the guys that had left before me who set up businesses, like a good friend of mine in the Navy, Tim McSweeney, set up his own electrical contracting business. He asked me, would I come in and check out his safety documentation? He was starting to get busy, starting to deal with bigger clients. So he needed documentation to be up to date. So I take a half day on a Friday, or I go in on a Saturday morning, do the gig. And I was getting my experience out, but I kind of really enjoyed it. So when it came around to 2006, in terms of actually retiring from the Navy, it was kind of like a no-brainer. I said, look, Marion, this is going to work, because things are starting to tick along nicely. We probably had half a dozen clients that we were dealing with on a regular basis, and probably another half a dozen that were popping in and out for bits and pieces. So I was kind of thinking to myself, pension, okay, it's not going to pay for everything. A few bob that I learned from health and safety, that little bit of work balance, this is gonna work. And it did.
Are you an early stage founder solving problems in the food supply chain? The Green Man Group sees the value in your work and has launched the Growing Further Awards to back your vision. These awards are designed to promote startups that are driving sustainability and innovation in key areas of the food supply chain, including production, distribution and retail, built environment, and customer engagement. Enter at growingfurther.io for a shot at a share of the €100,000 cash prize and the chance to pitch your company to a crowd of industry leaders. Don't miss out. The deadline for entries is October 4th, with final judging and the awards set for January 2025. Learn more and apply at growingfurther.io.
If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
Was that your plan? Did you always want to set up something for leaving the Navy? Was that like...
No, it was kind of like... I mean, I could have gone and worked for somebody in health and safety. I just, like, when I went back and did my diploma in UCC in health and safety, it was kind of like, this is something that I'm interested in, and let's just see where it goes. And after I qualified and started doing a little, kind of a few gigs here and there, I said, this is interesting, and I like this, and I like the fact that I'm getting out and meeting people. Maybe this is something that I could try my hat at. So I had applied for a couple of different jobs before I actually
That's
set up.
That's interesting, yeah. Because you weren't like, I have to do this, I have to work for myself.
No, but then I kind of said, sure, look, the pension will be there. I'll only have to earn so much from this to take a first to break even and not have any wolves at the door or something. Now, Marion was working anyway, so we had a little bit of a cushion as well. But it's still kind of daunting, because I was after doing the Navy for 21 years. Mm. I was kind of going out on my own.
And it's a complete... 180, like,
well, you're being told what to do for 21 years of your life, and then it's like you're telling yourself what to do, which is, as you know, Gary, very hard, because the mind,
every day I get up and go, Gary, what are we doing?
We gotta
today?
Do this.
There's no adults in the room, Gary. Yeah. You're meant to be the adult now.
Yeah, exactly. Grow up quick. But I mean, I was 39, I had a family, I think Peter mentioned it yesterday. You have different responsibilities when you're starting a business that later on in life.
Yeah.
As a youngster with no kind of inhibitions, no family, no real commitments, you can really give it a go. Like, and if you fall flat in your face, well, you just get up and go again. I think you get up and go again anyway, but the hit is a lot less when you have nothing to lose. You know, so you always have that in the back of your mind that something, you have to be responsible. Like, you've got a wife, you've got kids, you got to pay bills, you got a mortgage.
I think it's important to hear these stories, though, because people are always looking like, oh, this is the only way, this is the one way. They're looking for extremes. They're looking for rules. There's no one way to start a business.
It's been 6.5 billion years of this planet. It's never been proven to me that there's only one way. Mm. There's always a way.
Yeah.
Like, everybody goes up the front of the mountain, but there's nothing wrong with sneaking up the back. You know what I mean? So,
I get the chopper off.
It doesn't matter how you do it, though.
Exactly.
Like most businesses are reinvented, like, bar the one-off okay. But then somebody will do iterations of that business as it goes.
Yeah.
So nothing ever stays the same.
How did you go from, like, then yourself just going, right, we'll do this for a bit, see what happens, to, like, it getting to such a scale? So, like, I suppose that initial kind of like from one to two, I always talk about the zero to one, but we can explore that there. But I think the one to two for you is interesting because you had no real intention of like growing a group.
Oh, no.
So like, how did you, as you started to get busier, how did you think about it? Because I think that's an interesting one to pull out, because how did you think about growing?
I think what happens is, and I'm only just going from my own kind of perspective, I think you gain a lot of confidence. I mean, I wasn't an extremely confident person. I wasn't shy in talking about it. I was a good talker. I mean, I like people and I like talking. I think that's going back to my old days in the hotel business in Torquay before I even joined the Navy. I learned a lot. And I think we talked about that before, about how traits that you can bring into business. I think just learning how to deal with people is huge. But I was never not comfortable talking to people. So I think that's great. If you can walk into a room and shake hands with somebody, smile and say, "Hi, how are you? I'm Andy." Or whoever you are. It's such a leveler for a lot of people because you say, "Oh, this guy's okay. I can chat to him." And it just opens up conversations. One of the things I did when I actually started the business up was I joined BNI, which was a network group.
Mm.
And that kind of got me into dealing with different categories of people, from lawyers to accountants to plumbers to painters, all sorts, print and design guys. So I joined the BNI, and what was interesting about that was that it's still brilliant. I mean, I'm still in BNI 20 years later, and people be looking at me, "Oh my God, you're running the company, and you still get up at 7 o'clock on the Wednesday morning and go to these meetings." Yeah, I said, because I love them, because you're around like-minded people. Mm. Who are all trying to help each other. That's the philosophy of it, giver's gain. And I sleep, eat and dream giver's gain, because I think...
Giver's gain.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. But when you give, it always comes back. It might come back straight away, but a year down the line, you get this contract. You say, "Oh yeah, how did you hear about us?" "Oh, Gary Fox introduced me to you."
Feels good too.
And you go, "Oh, wow."
Yeah. Just a feeling of like, it feels great to just do an intro. Like we were chatting, just having coffee there, and I was like, "Oh, I need to introduce you, Chris." Not that there's anything to do with that. It's just like, I just want you, like yesterday I introduced two people. I was like, I don't know what will happen of it. Nothing. But they're just good people.
Yeah.
And it's just like you set up, and I've started to explore this kind of like butterfly effect of like doing something good, rippling across the world, because the world is a bit crazy at the minute. It's a lot of negativity, a lot of anger and fear. But they... Yeah, you can't control.
I don't see that.
Oh, I block out everything. Don't do TV. Don't do radio. I was in the gym the other day and they had Sky News on. I was like, why would you have Sky News on in a gym? Mm. A place of happiness, workout and focus. Yeah. I was like, turn the football on.
You're trying to clear all the crap out of your brain and then you are feeding more of it.
And it was just endless cycle. Yeah. That's a conversation from another day. But like, absolutely. I was like, it's more so like, you can't control that. What can you control? You can control how you feel and control what you do. Control we do today. So when we go off here today, we can control the impact we have with the 10 or 20 people we meet. Do you make them feel good? Do you make them feel bad?
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel good or do you feel bad? You got to feel something.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
It doesn't feel good.
But so what BNI was good for me was obviously I was starting a business, so I needed a network of people outside of my Navy network, because that's the and my soccer network of the different soccer clubs that I played with while I was here. That's a very small network in the greater scheme of business, you know. So I said, okay, this is interesting. Went along, really, really enjoyed it. It was one category of business, so there was no competition. So if I joined the group, there was no other health safety consultant.
Okay. There. And that's in Cork, is it? Is that a county thing or a city thing?
No, it's BNI is an American franchise. Like it's in I think it's in 132 countries. Like there's over 300,000 members globally, which I'll get into later on in terms of actually the exposure it gives you then as the company grows. But just for me, my little world was in Cork. There was three or four chapters in Cork. I went along this chapter, really enjoyed it. But then, as I got to understand it, you've got a sales team of 20 other guys who are out there looking. Somebody's, "Oh my God, I need to get my health safety." "You know, actually, I have a guy for you. Great guy. He's in our group. Well, I make an introduction." So you're getting phone calls in. Can you come in and do a safety statement? Or we need a bit of training? And that just kind of just ticked along. So I think year one, I did about €45,000, €50,000. And I was like, "Oh my God, this is a business." But I was really enjoying it. But what it did for me is the confidence to say, okay, well, what are we going to do next year, Andy? Because it's that get up in the morning. What am I doing today? Obviously, you have a routine and stuff, but get up in the morning. What am I doing today? What's my focus? So the focus was, let's go for 100,000. Let's just see, can we crack 100,000 next year? And I think the following year we did about 85. we had a great time. I had a great time doing it.
You're growing and you're enjoying.
You're growing, yeah. We're just rolling along, and that has been my journey, Gary, for the last 20 years. At the end of a year, I'll sit down and say, "All right, what's our focus for next year? What's our focus for 3 years' time? What's our focus for 5 years?" Now, I didn't have that kind of mindset or confidence when I was in my early years, but I think as you grow and as the business grows and as you get more confident and you get around more positive people, your whole philosophy changes, like your whole mindset changes in terms of what you can actually achieve.
So the confidence piece, that comes from doing the job, doing it well.
Well, it did for me anyway. I mean, as we grew as a company, and as you get different clients and you have different iterations in the business, your perception of the business and of what you can do and what you can achieve grows because your confidence is growing internally in you. Like, that's what I felt for me anyway.
How did you learn to be a CEO? We asked that with Peter yesterday. We had Peter from Teamworking yesterday, and we're asking him because he said one of his key kind of aha, eureka moments was he'd gone off to New York, came back, and the business was in great shape. And he was like, "I realized I'd been a developer and not a CEO." And he talked about how he kind of went on that journey to become a CEO. So you were going from working for yourself, having the crack. Andy looked after Andy. Andy told Andy where to go. How did you then, as the business started to grow, how did you learn, I guess, how to be like a people manager, a CEO, a chief spokesman?
I think in the early years, so 2007, we would have taken on our first employee, Trish, who was like our office manager. Took a lot of crap off my desk in terms of, because I was burning a lot of candles at both ends. Not just one candle, a lot of candles. And you can't do it. Physically, you can't do it. I was exhausted. My blood pressure was all over the place. And I remember the doctor saying, "Listen, something's going to have to give here." Like, so we took on somebody. So Trish came in, started looking at the invoicing and just following up in emails. And I was surprised the amount of actually extra time that it gave me. But extra time to be more productive, not just in the business, but maybe even look at myself and see, can I tweak myself? And I suppose I started getting into that kind of different mindset, like how do people grow and all that kind of stuff. Not greatly, but just enough to kind of start getting interested.
How did you start doing that?
You hear something on the radio, you hear something on YouTube or something like that, and you kind of go, "Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I'll look into that." And you do for a wee while and then it falls off. I really got into it later on and like, because I really seen the value of it. But enough to get me to kind of pay more attention on the other subtle things in business that I have to do, that I'm not just the health and safety consultant. The following year, in 2008, we took on like another consultant. No, 2009, we took on another consultant because we won a really, really big contract with a multinational in Dublin. I was there more or less kind of 3 or 4 days a week. So all my other clients that I built up weren't getting serviced and looked after as much as possible.
So how did you make that jump, though, from just being you to like winning a large multinational? Because I think that's, and I was just, as you were chatting there, I was like, I really want to ask him this, because I think that's the piece that a lot of people either don't see or don't do, is that leap from you to like now growing a business. When you work for yourself and you're on your own, it can be kind of comfortable to stay there.
Yeah. I wanted to see how far I could go in terms of, okay, and I wasn't thinking a group of companies 20 years time, like doing all the revenue that we're doing. I was just thinking like, how far can we push ourselves next year? Like, if it's just me, is it just going to be this? Or if I get somebody else, or do I not take that contract? Like, do I just concentrate in Cork and let's be comfortable and happy? And I just kind of this thing like, go on, Andy.
That voice.
Give it a go.
The inner voice working well.
What the hell can happen? Nobody's going to die. So took the contract. Within a month, I said, okay, I need to get help, because I could see this was going to be busy, and it was going to be busy for a substantial amount of time. So we took on another consultant. He looked after Cork. I looked after the multinational. And then within the multinational space, then people move. You build up relationships. The 2IC to a guy that brought you in is not going to get promoted because the guy that is ahead of him is very, very young. He goes to another multinational and says, like, "Andy, really loved the work you were doing with ABC. Would you come and do it before us?" And it just snowballed. So we had to take on another consultant. And then you're going to say, okay, so you're going from 85,000 revenue to 300,000 to 800,000 to 4.2 million, like 7 or 8 years later, and you're going to go, "Holy crap, how did that happen?" And then they ask you, "Listen, we're setting up somewhere in Finland, or we're in Denmark, or whatever country they're going to. Would you come along and help us out?" And you're kind of going, Yeah, sure, why not? I'm sure we can conquer the world.
But even moving to a different country, like, how do you, like...
That's bonkers. It is.
It is wild that you tell me that story. I'm not going to... Hold on. So how do you, like, physically, logistically do that? Because I'm always curious how people expand. Because, like, you have companies all over the world now. And I think that, I'm like, how the hell is Andy managing this? Like, so when you moved beyond Ireland for the first time, did you just take the same approach? Going, well, we'll just go there. We'll see and we'll figure it out.
Well, one step at a time. Let's get the first client. And luckily enough, in the few countries that we moved into, like, we had a client. We were following the client at their request. So it gives you a good footing in terms of you're going to build revenue in that country, and then you could possibly take on somebody else in that country and let them look after the local market. You just service the client. But then at a point, that becomes unmanageable because you can only be in one place at one time. And if you get more than one country, which we did, it becomes not a problem. It's a challenge. You're like, okay, we got to get more help. So you're still on that kind of growth journey. We're still in the growth journey now, like, but it's really interesting. But yeah, it's just one step at a time, Gary. I think I never had any kind of mad philosophy or strategy, that probably to my detriment and a few of the challenges we've had, but they're good learning curves. And like I said, thankfully nobody died, like, you know what I mean? So it's, you take the learning and move on. But I think for anybody that's looking to jump, it's just like, take the leap. Like, what is the worst that can happen? Like, nobody is going to die. Like, you fall flat on your face, it doesn't work out, you dust yourself down, you get a clip around the ear from somebody, like, what harm? And you go again.
Was there a moment where you were like, what have I done? This is now...
I've done every morning you wake up and go, oh my God,
this is getting to the stage. But like, when you talk about like the revenue jumps there, like that rarely happens.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think when I was in with you... In 21, I think we were just under or just over $17 million. And I think this year we'll be, or last year we were just under $40 million. This year we're on track for $55 million. So, and I think I give you my kind of journey in terms of in my head what I'd love to do now, like $75 million by 2025, $150 million by 2030, and look at potentially IPO in early 2030s. And we're kind of more or less on track. But those dreams were non-existent for like 20 years
ago.
You've
got a bloody plan now, don't you?
Yeah, well, you've
got a master plan now.
Well, it's like, you know, I mean, turning over an extra 500,000 revenue is not like, that's not, that's like, okay, we can do that because if we just win that one contract or place another four people here on the recruitment side of the business, yeah, we can achieve that.
Yeah.
So you have to stretch yourself. But I think it's the confidence thing. I said, okay, this is kind of daunting, but let's give it a go. And if we don't get there, we'll have a hell of a time on the journey trying, you know. So, and it's about the journey. It's not the end result. Because every time you hit a goal, what do? You recess and make another goal. So that's irrelevant. Like, the goals will just keep changing. But the journey is the journey. Like,
that's, if I've learned nothing over the last 5 years, apart from it's the journey.
It is. And you have to have fun doing it. And we, in Macken Group, we have fun. We have a lot of fun. Like, team do mad stuff. Like, we did the carpool karaoke last year with people emailing us from all over the world saying, we love your character.
Really?
Yeah, it's because it was just like, okay, it was done, but they'd never seen it done really in business. Yeah. And it was just our little take on it. But that was one of the girls in the office that, like, do you mind if I do this? And she said it to Fiona, our CEO, and she goes, sure, why not? Let's have a bit of fun. And the reaction it got on LinkedIn and stuff, it was just mental.
I love that, because it kind of blows apart the myth. People think like certain sectors are sexy and fun, whereas like when you look at health and safety, you're like, I say, the lads are great crack.
Yeah, legislation, oh my God.
I say they're a howl over the canteen. But like, it's not about like, it's taking what you do seriously, not taking yourself seriously.
Correct.
And I think that's, I love chatting to people like that, because business is serious, but it doesn't have to be like you say, no one dies. Like, not heart surgeons here. People get so caught up into believing they have to behave a certain way.
Yeah.
Having this veneer. And I chat to a lot of people, and like, sometimes within 10 minutes I can go, oh, there's a character. You can tell they're playing a character.
Yeah.
You know, they're different. And there's one thing I love about you, when I meet you, you're the same. Stable, positive, confident. Whereas you meet some people, up today, down tomorrow, up today, down tomorrow, and you're like, you just don't know where you stand with them. Like, I just think in business, it's a long game.
Oh, yeah. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Game. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
And when you start piecing all these things together from your story of, like, you know, giver's gain, and just like thinking in these terms of just one step after the next. Like they're fundamentals. Like people, we talked earlier about there's no one rule, but there's fundamentals, there's principles. I like to think of it as like I have a principles doc in Notion, and I kind of like have these 20 principles that I work around, and I kind of read them and I change them and I tweak them. But like there's certain things you just have to live by.
But the basic principles haven't changed, Gary. In 6.5 billion years of a planet, they haven't. Tide comes in, tide goes out, sun goes down, moon comes up, moon goes down, sun comes up. It hasn't changed. The seasons follow each other. Like, it doesn't change. So people try and reinvent the wheel all the time, but the fundamentals are business is 95% boring, mundane, shitty, crappy stuff that you just have to get out and grind.
Emails. Yeah. That's just to be said.
When I get back to my office after today, there'll be probably 100 odd emails in that box, and I'll be going, my God. But you got to do them. Yeah. No, filter out the crap or whatever, but they're still there. You got to make the phone calls, got to make the sales calls, got to make the appointment calls. That is just part of business. The 5% of on the stage going, yay, you did it. You might find this. Got an award. But people look at that and go, oh, yeah, sure, that's it. And then when they get in and say that it's not it, it's like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But but that is true. Like, it is.
There's a big glamorization.
They're huge.
There's a big glamorization of like you work for yourself and be an entrepreneur. It is great crack. It's mighty crack, but it's exactly like you said. That's the 2 or 3%.
Yeah. Most of it is.
They see you in the paper
boring.
Like once a year and they're like, God, he's flying, isn't he? You're doing well. You're kind of going.
Oh, you get the old, like when you haven't met somebody for, geez, you really fell on your feet, didn't you? Yeah.
I haven't heard that one in a while. Oh, I suppose from you, from the Navy, people thought you just like left and then like were handed this great business.
Yeah.
But like, talk to me about mindset, because that's something I always admire about you, how you approach things. Like your mindset is very strong in terms of how you approach things. Is that nature nurture? Was that learned or was that always in you?
No, I don't think it was always in me. I was probably, as a kid, I was probably, definitely wasn't confident. I was plumpy, chunky kind of guy, so I got the usual kind of nicknames and stuff when you were younger. So that would have dented my confidence for sure. I think the Navy definitely changed me and helped me in that regard, just to, you know, to be proud of what I was doing and be happy with myself and just get on with people. And that confidence grows then, Gary, as you get along. I probably didn't get into the whole, like I said, I've touched on it over the years, but probably in the last 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 years, the whole mindset stuff in terms of really kind of focusing in on it and to a granular level in terms of what it can do for me as an individual, both professionally and personally. Then you're just constantly tweaking. Like I think I told you when I was chatting to you, like January 2020, before COVID, I kind of said, right, I spent 2019 looking at all these different really successful people, like the Buffetts, the Gates, you know, the Elon Musk, all these kind of Richard Bransons, all these kind of guys. And I said, what are they doing different than everybody else? Like, what? There has to be something. So, and when I went through all the stuff, I mean, they all read a lot. Nutrition, sleep, leadership qualities. Like, they have practiced all of it. And I said, okay, so if I want to get to that kind of level, I'm going to have to start working on myself. So before 2020, I'd read a few books, but not many. Mostly kind of biographies. Richard Branson, who would be an icon of mine. I love the guy. I think he's a phenomenal businessman. Alan Sugar, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, 2020, I said, right, I'm going to read a book a month. I'm going to read for half an hour every day, Monday to Friday, bookmark it for the weekend. Done. And plus or minus, at the end of the month, 2 or 3 days, you've got a book read.
Compound effect.
Yeah. And that was, Darren Hardy has been huge as well.
You
yeah.
set me on that path. Yeah.
like, I don't even know how I found Darren Hardy, but I suppose it's the algorithms. Like, when you start looking at all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the stuff like Les Brown, Mary Morrissey, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn. Well, Jim Rohn probably came later because of Darren Hardy, because one of the stories that I didn't realize was Darren Hardy was actually mentored by Jim Rohn, and Tony Robbins was actually mentored by Jim Rohn.
Okay.
Which is interesting then, because you've got two really solid kind of icons in that whole kind of personal development space. Mentored by one of the top guys over the years. But you start digging down into all the kind of stuff, and the more it is, it's about personal growth, working on yourself, which Irish people innately are not really good at.
No.
You know, we don't know. Oh, my wife would be like, woo-woo, the woo-woo yeah. stuff. Yeah. But she's seen the change. So, yeah, okay, there's probably something in it, but it's just not for me. But how big do you want to become? How much are you prepared to grow?
It all starts between the ears, right?
Yeah. That's... you have to have the mindset in terms of, and like I said, it's not an innately centered skill that everybody has. You have to work on it. But the more you work on it, the better it gets, the better you get. And I've seen it because the iterations in the business, you kind of go, my God, this is kind of nearly going hand, not necessarily hand in hand, but it's not far off.
Well, you can put probably the two charts up on the wall.
Yeah.
And go, right, look, this is where we really started to step things up. And then you look back at your own personal journey. Like, and that's why I love talking about the brain, the business and the body. And like, I do get a good bit of pushback on this. People kind of go, I don't do anything from my brain or my body. I'm like, okay, whatever, it's up to you. But I think when you start to tie, like the modern breed of founder, like yourself, they realize this. They realize the power of, like, it's not just about like slogging 16 hours a day to build a business. Because as I've chatted to people, I always ask anyone who's had an exit or a sale or an acquisition, how do they feel? And I'm almost blue in the face talking about this because it's something I just think about all the time. No one, I think one or two people have said, yeah, it's great, just enjoy myself now. The rest of them go, didn't feel anything. Mm. That goal they were searching for, the when I moment, when I sell, when I this, when I that, just left them empty, just left them without purpose. And they thought that that was the outcome they were chasing.
Yeah, and I think if you live for that when I moment, or if we do, or when I, it eventually, like, inevitably never comes. A lot of the time.
How can you know if you've never had it? Like, you're searching for this thing, you go, oh, that's going to be the moment. But if you've never had micro versions of that,
yeah,
if you've never tested it, how are you ever going to know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. It's true. And a lot of it as well is not marking the occasions as you go along.
Yeah.
It was something I didn't do for years. And I have to thank Bernie Butler, who was in the B&I with me years ago. And I remember we got that big contract in 2009 that changed the business. And she goes, my God, you're working for like a world, like top organization. And she goes, what did you do to celebrate? And he goes, I went to work. and she kind of nearly went, she said, cop yourself on.
Yeah.
Andy. Mark the wins, no matter how big or small they are. Take Mary into the pictures, take her out for dinner, go, you know, crack a bottle of wine.
It doesn't have to be outrageous. It doesn't have to be went to the Bahamas for a week. It just has to be a symbolic statement of going, we did this, so then we sat down and we did that.
Yeah. Because you tie that occasion to the memory.
Yeah.
And the memory's lodged. If there's nothing to celebrate it, there's no memory lodged for that iteration of business. So when you retire in your 60s or 70s or whatever, and people are like, how did you do that? Like, what were the changes? What were the iterations in business? You'll find it hard to recall because you've never actually marked it or just... The brain is funny like that, but it does stamp. It's like a timestamp nearly. Like.
And entrepreneurs are wired that way. We're wired to push. I think I said this yesterday. I have a problem in terms of, like, I just think of the next one. We record this, I'm like, right, what's the next 10 episodes I'm doing and what is the next milestone? So we do have to, like, step back and go, right, I'm going to mark 1 million downloads. Then what are we? Because I think that's important too. Like you were talking about mindset there, that cements something in your brain. You're like, oh, I've done 1 million, 10 million. You can see that path. But if you just keep running on the treadmill, you know, it's like when you go to the gym. If you just go to the gym every day without any kind of purpose, after about a month, you kind of start to tail off because you just don't have that focus. Yeah. I think of it as just like gamifying my life, tricking myself almost, going, right, what's the next goal? Or the next goal is 8 weeks time where we're going to do this, and this. You need those things in life as a human, because otherwise life just can't be one endless journey of 7 days, 9 to 5, just like clocking in, clocking out.
No. Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think if somebody does a 10-year span and they look back at the first year compared to the 10th year, if they've had a purpose, if they've had a goal or a vision of what they wanted to be or what the company wanted to be, or they will find the kind of resilience and determination and confidence in getting up every morning and doing that, because the purpose and the goal and vision and dream is there. If you're just going through the motions, that gets tiring after a while. And I think that's where the whole mind and body comes in, because that helps you not just grind. The grind is important, like we said, that's 95% of your day. But you have to have that headspace, and you have to have the time for the body to nutrition, recovery, train, all that kind of stuff, because that enhances the overall performance. Like I said, like 2020 was my start for that, and I didn't realize how powerful it was, because I really doubled down. probably the fittest I've been in my life. I was running times last year that I didn't ring, that I did, couldn't run 30 years ago, because I was having my few points and I was having my Chinese, and but I've cut all that kind of crap out now. Only a few glasses of wine or a few points. My time is so valuable now. It's like I'm not wasting it. Yeah, 6 hours in bed on a Saturday morning for a hangover that cost me money. It's not worth it. If I could tell my 20-year-old self that, I probably wouldn't have believed my 50s.
I think it was just quite a bit. Like, I remember being in college and you're kind of going, oh my God, the amount of time you waste. But that's part of life too. You can't look back and go, ugh. But, you know, because you did the best you could at the time.
Yeah, oh no, 100%. Absolutely. But there's a lot of learning in it. If you can get that balance right, you're going to do really, really well.
So how do you look after yourself? Talk the mindset thing you talked about, the reading. How else you look after yourself, mind, body?
So I get up between 5 and 5.30 every morning, religiously, Monday to Friday. I will meditate for half an hour. I'll read for half an hour. And then I will hit the road for my 5K or head to the gym, do my 5K and some weights. Every day, Monday to Friday, will I fail. If I'm traveling, I will find a gym. I'll find a route or a park. I'll do something to keep myself ticking over. If it's out of the routine of what I would normally do when I'm at home, but I will definitely train. I just think you feel better for it, Gary. You just create so much energy for you.
The positive momentum that triggers your day is huge. Yeah.
And what I'm loving now is my two boys, who are now like 26 and almost 22, who are complete skeptics of everything that I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Really?
In terms of like the getting up early, the meditation, they're now training 5 days a week, getting up a little bit earlier.
That must be a buzz for you.
It is a buzz, because you're going to, Dad, what are you doing? Nobody does this. And he goes, there is loads of people.
Yeah.
Not millions of people, but there's loads of people.
But yeah.
But I said, the millions of people are in the 95%. I'm aiming for the 5%. That's where I'm aiming for.
Not that.
If I don't get to the 5%, it doesn't matter. Again, we're back to the journey. The journey will have been enjoyable, because I love getting up in the morning.
Mm.
I get in the morning now, it's bright at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You're getting in, I put on my little eye thing, I lie down and do my meditation. And you get up and you go, okay, let's go. Read. You get positive stuff into your brain. You hit the gym. You're not watching Sky News. You're in the zone.
By 7 o'clock, you've kind of had your wins for the day already. You've done three core principles for the day that you've now set yourself up. Yeah, so everything after that then is the snowball effect. I always think of the day as, do you stack tiny wins, tiny losses? And this comes back to the book you recommended to me back in 2020, you might have recommended to me, Compound Effect, Darren Hardy.
Yeah.
And I've read then multiple books around that, Atomic Habits and similar things like that. It's the compound effect. Mm. Do you take tiny wins every day or tiny losses? Because in the moment, you won't feel it. You won't feel the pain of skipping the workout. No. You won't feel the pain of not looking after your brain. A week later, you might. A month later, you definitely will. But fast forward 30 years.
Mm.
I always think of my daughter as 17 months now. I think of, instead of like, don't tell her how to live. Show her how to live a good life.
Leave an example.
Because I hate that when people say, my son's going to do this and my daughter's going to do that. And you kind of look at them and you're like, but you don't do any of that.
Mm.
You don't do any of that.
You have to lead by example.
So how can you then tell them that's how you should live if you don't live that way?
Yeah.
I think it's an incredibly motivating thing to do. Like, and look, she'll find her own path. But I think once you can kind of stand over yourself and kind of go, yeah, I've lived the best life I can.
Yeah.
And I've had a happy life.
I think if everybody could say that in the twilight years of their life, they would be much more fulfilled as a person. Because my journey for me is, and like my dad always said it, like, don't ever worry about stuff you can't control. He drilled it into me, like, as a child. There's no point in you worrying about the weather tomorrow because you can't control that. There's no point in you worrying about your exam results because you're not correcting it. That's somebody else. You've done the best you can.
Yeah.
Just let it go.
Wise man.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've lived that principle, and that probably overall has probably helped me in that. Like, people say, you don't care about anything. And I said, well, no, I do care about stuff.
You care deeply about the right things.
Yeah. And I remember having an argy-bargy with Marion one time. She goes, you're so selfish. You care about nothing. And I said, I care about three things. And she goes, what are they? And I said, you and the two boys. She had no comeback. Because if the house burned down in the morning, you build a new house.
Exactly.
The car crashes, you repair the car. But I lived that all my life. So I think all the spurs off that then kind of fed from that.
Mm.
I think if you can live that kind of a life in terms of just be calm, like, if nobody died or nobody got injured, then look, it's repairable, it's fixable. If it's not fixable, move on. But you know, like, nobody died. Like, if you can't control it, stop worrying about it. But a lot of people can't. A lot of people worry about the really stupid nonsense kind of stuff, and that then builds into bigger stuff and becomes a problem. I think Peter chatted about it yesterday. Like, just the festering, you know, like,
yeah,
not necessarily festering, but like, little things become bigger things, that become bigger things, and then they cause a problem that shouldn't happen in the first place. If you could just let go.
It's the shadow effect. Yeah. Like, the shadow effect is small, mm-hmm. and then it just, the shadow just casts a bigger and bigger, yeah. bigger. I chatted to Pat Tibley during the week, and he was talking about the personal shadow, your own shadow, your dark mm-hmm. shadow coming into the room. And it was a lot of that was just not addressing it. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in Ireland, I think we have a lot of like, sure, yeah. And that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bit of a character. And that's the end of the conversation. Yeah. There's no kind of going, oh, what are we going to do yeah. about the situation? I have a rule, like, don't complain about it unless you're going to do something about it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I refuse to talk about the weather. I refuse to talk, like, if it's wet, put on a jacket. If it's sunny, put on shorts. Like,
yeah.
Just stop talking about the weather.
Billy Connie said years ago, if you want to know the weather, just stick your head out the window.
Yeah. Unless it's extreme, unless we're having a blizzard or a heat wave, then I'll have a chat with you. But like, otherwise I'm like, let's just get on with it. It's going to be 95% the same most of the time. Just talk about better stuff, talk about deeper stuff, or don't talk at all. I hate small talk,
exactly.
Ironically, for a podcast host. I hate small talk. Yeah. I like these kind of deeper conversations where you kind of go, okay. But it's interesting, like what we're talking about there, some people kind of like probably rolling their eyes now, kind of going, oh yeah, lads, they live such a wholesome life. But it goes back to what you said about doing it every day, because that's not easy to do. It's not easy to have that calm and that veneer, because it is easier to kind of lose your rag and go, ah, fuck that guy. Whereas you don't become a Zen monk overnight. You have to do the reps. It's the same as the gym and the fitness. I always think fitness is the perfect kind of like mirror for business. If you do it every day, it gets easier.
Mm.
You get better, you get fitter. Whereas if you don't go to the gym, you do it once a month, you're dying.
Well,
you're absolutely blowing.
Repetition, repetition, repetition. You improve if you repeat. It's the 10,000 hours, you know, like, you, it starts with the first hour when you're really crap, but like 10,000 hours later, you're not really crap, you're really good. But that's just being consistent and doing it every day. I'm always fascinated, like, what's not to learn from that? But it's the actually doing it,
because it's hard. Because it's hard. Yeah. It's perceived to be hard. Because consistency is one of the hardest things in the world.
Mm.
Consistency.
What did I say? It's simple, but it's not easy.
Yes, and that's true. So talk to me then about like your time management, kind of going beyond this, going a bit deeper, because you now have a group. You now have things all over the world. It'd be very easy for you to be like always on.
Mm.
That whole thing of like, oh, I have time zones and I need to be online at like 10 a.m. And 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. How do you manage that?
And I did that. I mean, obviously, like, as you move into different locations and different regions, you say, okay, I got to be up at 6. I got to take some calls with the guys in Singapore and Shanghai and Hong Kong. And I got to be on like after 6 o'clock because the guys in California are coming on at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 8 o'clock for them. So, and I did that for a while. I kind of said, but this is ridiculous. Like, so what I started doing then was looking at the organization of the business. I was probably a blocker for a lot of it in terms of, because I was kind of doing a lot of it. So I remember in 2019, I got Fiona Donnelly, who is our global COO. She was a consultant at the time, and she came in to do it. I said, look, I want to kind of warts and all, start at the front gate, finish at the back gate. Tell me what's wrong with the business. I'm like, what do we need to do? I said, because we're not going to get to the next iteration of growth if we keep doing what we're doing.
And okay, like, so you brought her in to do like a 360 deep dive on the whole thing.
Talk to everybody, talk to the team in America, talk to the team. Like, you've got a blank canvas here.
Brilliant.
So she came back about 3 months. I think she came in September 2019. And Christmas time, she presented a report. And I said, okay, top three. What's the top three? She goes, you need help. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you're getting in your own way. It's just hard to see the picture if you're stuck in the frame. Like, ouch. But I kind of knew that. I kind of knew it because...
But you needed someone to tell you.
Yeah, somebody outside of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, the team don't tell me I'm brilliant and wonderful all the time because... Well, maybe I am. But but they'll tell me, like, no, you're wrong. That's not going to work. Mm. And then when I take a step back a small bit and I say, oh, yeah, actually, that's probably not going to work. Just because you're the CEO and you make the decisions, it doesn't matter. sometimes the teams are smarter and better and they're younger and they're kind of get, they have a different perspective on things. So I said, okay, that's fair enough. So she said, look, if you're interested, I'd love to be in that process. Like, so whenever you decide to go down that route. And I just said, when can you start? And she goes, no, seriously. And I said, no, seriously, when can you start? She goes, what? I said, why would I go through all the routine of looking for a CEO? You've just been in the business for the last 3 months. You know everybody.
Was that at the back of your mind when you brought her in?
No. Oh, no. I didn't know that was going to be her number one recommendation for me to get out of my own way. Even though I knew I was a blocker. It was things I was doing. I was still doing finance stuff. Writing checks. What am I writing checks for? Wow. Yeah, stupid stuff. That takes time up in your day that you should be spending more productively and effectively on something.
You've read all these books, The Cost of Switching.
Yeah.
The cost of switching tasks is huge. Like, if you're writing checks here and then you're doing emails here about HR and then you're over here about New York, your brain just can't, as smart as you may be, the brain just can't switch gears that quickly.
I'll give you a better one. Darren Hardy's book, The Entrepreneur Rollercoaster, one of the paragraphs in it was to take your annual salary, divide it by 2,080 hours, which is the average 49 working week, and whatever your hourly rate is, if you're doing a task that's below that hourly rate, stop doing it. I was going to the shop for milk. I should buy it. It's only 15 minutes. Yeah, I'll tuck in mental stuff. You add that over the week, you've probably just wasted 2.5 hours of me charging my time out at 150 or 160 euros an hour. I was kind of like, that's
it's boring. The most obvious thing in the world. I say this to every entrepreneur I meet, every early stage entrepreneur. I'm like, especially if they're one person bands, I'm like, what's your hourly rate? And almost to a person, no one knows.
No.
And they kind of think it's for consultants or lawyers or kind of consultant doctors or whatever. I'm like, you have to know your hourly rate. Because if you don't know your hourly rate, you'll do all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, if it's below... Well,
you have no value on your time.
And there's an element of you have to walk before you can run. You can't be doing this day one kind of going...
100%.
Ego, I'm not doing the milk. I'll get the milk on order. I'm not doing... And they blow money willy-nilly because they haven't done that simple analogy. But if your time should be worth... Every entrepreneur's time should be worth 200, 300 quid. There's certain things. If you're hiring someone for 15 quid an hour, especially when you've so much access for remote work now, you can access talent all over the world. Absolutely. To do all these different things. And people who are 100 times better than you. I'm preaching to myself here because I still do silly things within the podcast. I'm still moving files around. I'm still helping with edits, silly stuff. Yeah. So it's not suddenly, nirvana, I know exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, weekend moment kind of thing. Yeah,
we still do it. But you have to keep reminding yourself, going, right, what's the hourly rate? Could I hire someone for 20 quid an hour to do that? Yeah. Even chunking it down, going, could I get someone for 10 hours a week? Because I think it's really daunting when you're an early stage entrepreneur. You're like, I can't have staff. I can't have this. But now you can access talent all over the world who will happily work with you for 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
20 quid an hour, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's those micro learnings that are really, really important.
Funny enough, Gary, that's how we really kind of developed the US business. On the health and safety side of things, I was working on a project for... company in the US. They're building a data center in Sweden, and I was the only contractor on that kind of EHS team that outside of a kind of full-time employee, so I had good access to a lot of people. But they brought in a marketing team who were doing all the kind of ISO stuff, and got really friendly with this lady, Denise Lane, and we kept in contact after the project was over. We kept in contact on Facebook and stuff. That was fine. And I remember as we got, I think it was probably 2016 or 2017. I'd probably 3 or 4 employees in America, but it was looking like we were going to get a few hires for this company. And I reached out to Denise and I said, Denise, I said, what are you doing? I could do some help in the US. And she goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I've started a business in 2014 and blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, great. She said, I've got 10 hours a week. So I'm working about 30 hours with this company, but she said, I'd love to work with you again. And we had a great time. And I said, okay, would you be interested in doing this? And she said, yeah. So Denise came on for 10 hours. Then it was 15 hours. And she kind of really liked it and got to 20 hours. But it was built up over time. I didn't go say, I need somebody for 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
Because I could handle the emails and stuff. But if somebody was looking for somebody in the same time zone that they could reach out to by phone or whatever, I had a person to go, hey, how you doing?
But little steps. You know, you don't have to always boil the ocean. You don't always have to do like, oh, I'll just hire someone and die. Because then the pressure on both of you is so high because it's probably the number one topic of conversation comes up with entrepreneurs is like hiring.
Yeah.
Hiring people is so tough and such pressure
because
then if it doesn't work out, you're back to square one.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a nightmare to then
and it's a drain.
Redo the process. And it just it goes against everything we just said in terms of your time then. It's sucked way back. You're going back 2 months to like restart the process. Talk to me then about kind of like where we are now. So the Macken Group has grown hugely.
Mm.
What does the next kind of like couple of years look like for the group and for yourself?
Well, so we got Fiona on board anyway. That was the first big step for me because then I could start concentrating on where we were going and what we were doing in terms of a proper strategic approach to growth. Like we wanted to, confidence grows, so you want to grow. And so I had that vision then of that ringing the bell or whatever. So how are we going to get there? So you look at our kind of growth pillars where we wanted to grow in the markets we were in. We wanted to grow different services with the clients we had. We wanted to grow in new markets, excuse me, and then acquisition. So we acquired a company in the UK last year, Greybridge Search and Select. Really, really good company. Very, very similar to ourselves in size on the recruitment side. Very similar in terms of their philosophies, how they treat their clients, how they treat their people. So we thought, you know, this might be a good fit for us. We met the guys, had a chat with them. They were looking, their CEO and founder was looking for an exit. The other two directors were looking to stay on and kind of drive the business. So that was kind of good for us. So we went after the guys and we acquired those because they're in interesting spaces. So they're in AI, cybersecurity, life science. AI, cybersecurity ain't going anywhere for the next 15 or 20 years.
Well, we're probably going to be two of the biggest growth areas in business. Correct. The next 10 or 15
and it's just
years.
Given us access to new areas. Plus, to our existing clients who are looking for people in those areas, we now have a sister company that can, look, we can dig in and help you out there because that's our space.
Mm.
So that was really good. So we've bedded that in over the last year. We've just sent out heads of terms for another acquisition that will bolt on to the EHS side of the business in that whole kind of safety area. I can't say too much about it because it's very, very early stages, but I think it'll be positive. We've done a lot of work with this company over the years. They've worked for us, so there's a good kind of understanding. It seems to be a very good fit, but they've got other offers as well. So we're waiting on them to come back after their powwow next week, but hopefully that'll be positive. And then it's just implementing those strategies in terms of the growth areas. Like, so grow the existing business, how can we do that? And it's back to training the teams in terms of where they want to go and understanding opportunities within the existing markets that we have. We've also branched into other areas now. Again, as revenue increases, it gives you opportunities. So we've gone into hospitality, we've gone into incubator space. Was a great one actually, because I always had this thing about, you know, being able to give back, and it would be lovely if we had a space where startups could come in and just work free and just like enjoy the space, and let's see if we can help you. And if you have to hire in a couple of years' time, look, give us a shot. You
know,
that was it. There was no tying them into we want equity or anything like that. I'm not into that kind of stuff because you want to see, like, you want to encourage young people to get into business, or even older people like myself get into business in their 40s. There has to be life after whatever you were doing first, you know. So Lenise seen an opportunity in her hometown in Rutherfordton in North Carolina. It's about like an hour and 20 minutes from Charlotte. There was an old 1940s garage stroke workshop. She says, it's been sitting here. It's like an eyesore in the town. It's actually going up for sale. I know the person who's selling it. Would you be interested in buying it? I said, I think it'd be cool if we had our kind of East Coast regional office. And I said, I said, how much does it cost? She said, like $70,000. What? Like 4,500 square feet.
No way.
What? Yes. Let's do it. So we bought it and we've turned it into, you know, Macken Talent, the talent side of business. That's our East Coast regional office. But we only need half the space. So
I love how wacky that is.
Yeah.
Andy Macken now owns a garage in Rutherford.
So we've turned it into this really, really cool kind of grungy kind of industrial workspace now. So half the space is now Macken Go, which is like you can come in, you can rent a desk for an hour, a day, a week, a month, a year.
That's so bizarre. I love it.
And we have got farmers coming in from the country to do their tax returns because the Wi-Fi 3 miles out is crap.
Mm.
We've got people coming in for court cases that take an office for 3 days a week. We've got people coming in from out of town for summer holidays and they'll work in the office for 3 months at a time. So we've got a combination of people. So we've since bought a second building in a town about 2.5 hours away called Reidsville, and we're going to do the same there. So the Mac and Go spaces are going to become a little kind of WeWork or Regis in the small kind of towns with 5, 10, 15,000 people that don't have access to that, but need a space like that.
I think that area is just going to be so big, like,
because the remote working area is not going to go anywhere.
Everything's changed, but you do need that space sometimes. Yeah. Like when you travel, you do need to, like here we're in Republic of Work right now, you do need that space where you kind of go and you can kind of, oh, I'm at work now. And either it's like Wi-Fi or it's a desk or just peace and quiet or whatever it is. That's so bizarre. I didn't even know this.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this was happening.
This is all the since I spoke to you last, all the things that have been happening since.
But it's so beautifully random. Nothing to do with it, but loads to do with it when you take the long-term zoom out picture of like, A, we're giving back, but B, now we're creating these. I just wrote relationships and like put two asterisks beside it because everything you've done has been about relationships.
Well, it's our number one value in the company.
Really?
Relationships matter. And they do. It's my philosophy in life because you're only as good as the people you know. You're only as good as, what say, your net worth is equal to your network.
Your net worth is your network is your net worth.
So,
yeah.
I'm just huge on that. And it's a culture that I've stamped on the company in terms of we will hire and fire based on that. If somebody isn't living up to looking after your people, being respectful, treating people with dignity, whether it's the client, whether it's a candidate looking for a job or a team member, you're not going to work here long term.
Yeah.
You're just not. Because everybody else is working here, having a good time, enjoying it, knocking it out of the park, but they're having a bit of fun doing it, but they're treated with respect. If somebody says something, they're not, nothing shoved down their throat. You've got the kind of approval for management to go and fail. If you think it's an idea and we're happy for you to go in that direction and it doesn't work out, you're not going to get fired. Like, they have the comfort of knowing they can just come out of themselves a small bit. So relationships for me is always huge, but I think it's, like I said, it's the number one philosophy. Relationships matter. Everything's about relationships.
One bad apple spoils the barrel.
Absolutely.
Because it's spoken about a lot, but no, you know, very rarely do people live it in that core thing because people are like, oh, it's so hard to hire people. Oh, we'll just let them go this one time. And you're like, oh, because then everyone else around the office goes, see, that's what will be accepted.
And I've done that. I've done that over the years where we've had people in the organization and they're really, really good and they get stuff done. But when you dig in and you do a little few one-to-ones and you kind of say, yeah, but he said this. And they go, what? I don't see that. And he goes, yeah, but like you don't see it because like, you're not dealing with him on day-to-day or you're not dealing with her on the day-to-day. But it's like, okay, so let's dig a little bit more. And they go, oh, that's two people that said that. Okay, so there's something here. So I got to dig then. But yeah, that can just fester away underneath of you. And because you're busy and you're going through your routine, you're getting your stuff done, you're not always observant, like, because as a company grows, I mean, it's fine when you've got 15 or 20 employees, but you've got 200.
When you're in the room, you can kind of go, people have described that to me as a two room problem. One room, everyone knows each other, literally hear and see, whereas two rooms, you're like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
John's causing a bit of ruckus over there. Three months later and it's too late when the person they'd been getting, hadn't been getting on with, have left.
Yeah, and they were the better person, like, because they were knocking out of the park. So you got to act quickly. Yeah, and you go from one room to two room to 14 countries, 275 people. It becomes a whole different. I think, was it Jack Ha from Alibaba said it, like, yeah, you've got a company for, you know, 5 million people, 500 million people, and like 5% of bad problems is 500 million. When you put it like that, like, the numbers are smaller with that percentage when they're small, but when you get big,
compound effect, everything comes back to it.
Yeah.
Do a quick fire round. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur should read?
Oh. I've read a lot of really good books.
You can give a few if you want.
Compound Effect, anyway. It's my number one book.
Still the same.
Yeah, because it's a simple philosophy, Gary. It helped us iterate the business in terms of looking at other options, like going into the Mac and Go spaces, going into hospitality, going into other areas for acquisitions that we mightn't necessarily thought that's a good fit for us. But when you actually dig it down underneath it, the compound effect of adding that into the company, it's going to have a bigger compound effect down the line. So definitely the Compound Effect. 5 a.m. Club, absolutely fantastic. Brilliant read.
Read it twice. First time hated it. Second time changed my life.
I'm actually reading it again because what I did for this year for my kind of book reading is I picked the best 12 books that I read in the previous 4 years. So I'm reading them every month. So this has been a fabulous start to the year in terms of the reading because they're all really good stuff that you're getting into your brain.
I think that's underrated, is rereading.
Yeah,
it's highly underrated because we like this volume thing of like, oh, I just need to read loads of new books.
No,
read it again and digest it.
I think we had a conversation a few years back and you were saying, yeah, I'm reading a lot, like getting through a book a week. And I think I said to you, I said, yeah, but you won't retain a lot.
Yeah, it was during COVID. I was just like trying to do anything I could to just like stimulate the brain, get going. Yeah.
I thought volume
would be the way to throw it through, but I've changed my stance hugely on that now. It's about like curating a smaller bunch, read less, and then reread as well. And so what I do is I have notes. I go through all my books with notes, and then pull out the notes, and I've started rereading the notes now.
Yeah,
that's a great way.
Absolutely, yeah. Bob Berg, David Mann, The Go-Giver, great book, very small.
Someone gifted me that, actually. Yeah,
yeah, read it. I've become really good LinkedIn chat friends with Bob Berg. Bob Berg's assistant actually worked in our office in North Carolina. In the incubator space.
See, closing
and, that. It was so funny. She gifted me the book, and I read it on the way on the flight home, and over the following weeks. And I just reached out to her. I said, "Look, I said, tell Bob, it's brilliant." She goes, "Tell him yourself. Just LinkedIn." So I linked in with Bob, and we've been chatting back and forth. Cool, yeah. So we're gonna meet Bob in North Carolina at some stage. He's gonna pop up and say hi. That was a really good one. The Richest Man in Babylon, George L. Clason, I think it is. Again, tiny little book, Gary, paper pages. Like it's nearly like a notebook, but it's great on how you should save, how you can invest, and this is based back in like the Arabian Nights, kind of like Egyptian times.
It's quirky, it's good read.
But the philosophy is the same. Like the principles haven't changed. We talked about principles, like not changing. It hasn't. So it's how to earn your euro, how to spend your euro, how to invest your euro. That kind of philosophy. Anybody 15 up and above should read it. Brilliant. Never Split the Difference, Chris Voss. Brilliant book, just in terms of negotiations and things like that. Like there'd be a few of them. Like there's some great ones.
What's something you had to learn the hard way?
Something I had to learn the hard way. Probably like what we just talked about a minute ago, not realizing where there's underlying problems within your organization. Or leaving things slide a small bit because that person's doing a great job. But ultimately it's hurting the team. So if you leave that go too long, it's going to be a painful, and it was painful because we were quite good friends. Happened with two different positions. You build up a relationship over years, and then you've got to let that person go or move them on, and that wasn't easy. It was horrible.
You're big on routines. What's the one thing in your routine you wish you started sooner?
I'm probably getting up earlier. No, I was always a good riser, but getting up earlier, like working towards, I would have always kind of got up around kind of 7 o'clock, which is, you know, it's reasonable. But like the 5 a.m., 5:30, like it was a game changer.
If I give you 1 million euro today, you can invest it in one person or one company, who would that be?
Oh, wow. That's a really, really great question. I think I would probably look at the whole sustainability energy sector, because that's going to be huge for the next 15, 20 years in terms of working out problems for the planet. And I know that's a kind of a, everybody wants to do that. But I think it is important. So I'd look for a company in that space. I don't have any particular one person because I don't know anybody in that space that's starting off. But I think there's going to be some cracking ideas and some cracking companies that are actually going to help solve a lot of problems in that area. So I'd probably look for that kind of space.
What do you believe other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
In things I do, is it? Or
what are your beliefs? What do people look at you and go, Andy, come on?
Well, if I tell people I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I meditate for half an hour, I read for half an hour, and they go to the gym, they go, really? You do that? And it's funny because we were at an event recently and my CEO was chatting to some guy. So then I come up to the conversation and she goes, Fiona was just telling me that you get up at 5, you read, meditate, read, and gym every day, Monday to Friday. And I go, yeah, really?
But that's such a strange thing that's found weird. Like, that you can't have a look after yourself. But it was a weirdo.
It was the shock of, like, why? And somebody asked me that one. They said, why do you get up at 5 o'clock? And I said, why not?
I find that so strange.
Yeah, but it happens. Yeah. But which goes back to our point in terms of, it's simple, but it's not easy because it's the consistency. You just need to do it every day. And if people start diet fads, they start training fads. It's like, go to the gym in January, it's packed. Yeah. By the end of March, start of April, it's the same old faces.
Someone said to me last week, your Instagram makes me sick. I was like, why? They're like, that whole like 1 of 30, 1 of 32, 1 of 32, 1 of 34. You're like, you're in there every day. I'm like, yeah, but it starts like 30 or 40 minutes. Like, it's not like I'm living in the gym for 8 hours a day. I was like, it's just like, it's 1 hour out of your 24.
But how do you read 12 books in a year? Well, I just read for half an hour every day.
Yeah, just tiny chunks. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Exactly.
What's one thing in your personal life you spend money on that brings you happiness?
Family. I think having done all the hard graft at the start and done the long hours and done a lot of the travel, now I still do a bit of travel, but and it's easier now because the boys are older. But I think going on a nice holiday, you know, taking Mariana for dinner. I think in 2022, my New Year's resolution was I'm going to bring her to a 5-star hotel for one night every month.
I really enjoyed that. That was like, that was every month I'd see it, I'd be like, class. You, felt like I was there with you.
The amount of people that told me to stop doing that, that it was causing major danger. But I just felt, you know, like,
stop setting the bar too high. And
they were like, stop setting, my wife's busting my balls over and not being. But I said, lads, it's one night. And again, it's like, I was working on myself. I probably wasn't the husband I should have been in terms of like being more attentive, being more caring. Not saying I was bad in any way, like, but you can be a lot better. You can be better at everything. You know,
life is in seasons. Sometimes it's a season to work, but then sometimes you have to step back and go, now it's a season whereby I can actually enjoy it a little bit more.
So we did that and it was great.
It's classic. Yeah, really good.
So it was brilliant. So things like that. So I think if you can, that was probably like, she had a great time, but it was giving me more pleasure.
I say, it's not exactly bad for you as well to go to a 5-star.
No,
like,
no, but I mean, the enjoyment of actually doing it, and the enjoyment of being able to do it, Gary.
Do you know what else is? It's the enjoyment of the commitment. Once a month, we're going to do this together.
Yeah.
And then you've the enjoyment all month of looking forward to it.
Mm, exactly.
It's huge. Yeah. Little the gamifying thing. Gamifying your life, kind of going, how can you like gamify it so you're kind of like looking forward to things? What's your final piece of advice to every founder or aspiring founder listening?
Just take one step. Journey of a 1,000 miles started with one step. We chatted about it at the podcast the last time we were on, 4 years back now. If you take a half a step or one step, it doesn't matter. You're still moving forward. You look back in 12 months' time, you're a hell of a lot further than you would have been if you took no steps. And that's simple as it is. No matter what business you're in, no matter what sector you're in, it doesn't matter. It's the one step.
You live it and breathe it. 2021.
Do your things.
The revenue. And then 2024, looking at the revenue. Like, that's the perfect example. Like, it's not all about money, but sometimes you have to look at the evidence in front of you and go, and you just took one step every day for the last like 3 years, 4 years.
Like, we doubled the revenue, Gary, from the last time we spoke to now. And it's taking the steps. It's just moving forward. Just taking the little wins. You take the hits. Get the little win again. But just keep half a step, quarter step. Doesn't matter. 10 steps. Like, you're going to have iterations in how successful you are in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, anyway, regardless. But if you're just moving forward, you'll be fine. It's the consistency.
Or can learn more about you and the Mackin Group.
Mackin Group, we're on LinkedIn, website www.mackingroup.com. Andy Mackin on LinkedIn. People will find me, people connect with me all the time. I'm happy to give a bit of my time to anybody who's looking for a bit of help or assistance, or if there's a problem they're going through that I've experienced myself. I think it's giving back is huge for me, because I think if you can make one little ounce of difference in some person's or some company's life, that's going to help them along the way. In a selfish way, that's more for me than it is for them, because you said, look, I was able to help them, you know, so, and it's all about the help. You know,
butterfly effect, yeah. Andy, we're sitting back here in 2 years' time. I'm already looking forward to thinking what that's going to be. I know a couple of secret projects you're working on.
Yes.
Absolutely. So our next, I'm making a commitment to you now and you're making a commitment to me. Our next pod is going to be in one of your secret projects. That's absolutely all I'll say.
Well, I'd love to do that. That would be awesome.
Andy, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Gary.